Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First off in our show, we're going to hear from Brad McCannell, who's going to be telling us a little bit about his experiences with the Rick Hansen Foundation. Tell me a little bit about your experiences with the Rick Hansen Foundation.
Well, I've known Rick for more than 30 years, actually, but I've only been with the foundation rather for the last 2.5. My alarm just went off telling me you're going to call me. I've only been with the foundation for the last 2.5 years, and I was brought in specifically to develop the Rick Hansen Foundation Accessibility Certification Program, and that's been my mission over the last couple of years. And we launched the program earlier in this year, and We're in BC and Halifax right now, but we're looking to expand right across the country over the next 18 months to 2 years.
So, can you give me an overview of the project itself, certification?
Yeah, the idea behind certification, what we saw as a foundation is over the last little while is that everybody agreed that access was important and they wanted to improve access, but nobody could really agree on what access really was. And that was one of the biggest problems we had. We had to find ways of stopping new mistakes from being made in new construction and at the same time address barriers in the environment and in the built environment that are out there currently. So our plan was to create a system that first identified the issues in the community in terms of access to the built environment. Second, develop an aspirational goal for the industry so that they can move forward. And third, to try to bring design back to the designers. You know, over the last couple of decades, the built environment has been, what people have done is they've been defaulting to code and going through code minimum, thinking that they were achieving access by meeting code, not recognizing that code's not a standard, and code's not even code is just a minimum. And access to code does not equal access for people with disabilities.
So, what are the most common barriers in the built environment that you're finding?
Well, the most common barriers in the built environment are physical barriers, and I don't just mean to people with physical disabilities in the classic sense. Often people think of physical disabilities as barriers to wheelchair users, and that's one of the things we're trying to dispel, is that the people relate to disability in terms of, and they often think of wheelchair users or maybe some kind of mobility impairment, but really the scope of the issue is much bigger than that. And in our definition of physical disability, we include sensory disabilities as well, like vision loss and hearing loss. And so what's happened over the last 2-3 decades is that the issues of wheelchair users have been addressed, not completely, but addressed probably more than anybody else. What we're trying to do is get people to recognize that it's bigger than that, that the access issues for older adults and seniors, for example, are really coming into play now as the what we call the silver tsunami takes over. You know, there's a large wave of older adults and seniors that are changing the demographics of the whole community. And so You know, in the past, as consultants creating access for people with disabilities, we used to deal with issues around wheelchair users, and we dealt with issues around people who are deaf, and we dealt with issues around people who are blind. Well, now that's all one person, and that one person's your mom. And so as this population ages, one of the things that we're finding is that wheelchair access is just not enough. That the real need in the community is to recognize some of the bigger problems, like, for example, people using hearing aids not being able to come into an environment and rely on their hearing aids, because remember that a hearing aid amplifies everything. And so they walk in to a terminal, for example, and because of the noise level of the terminal, they tend to turn their hearing aids off. And so now instead of dealing with people who are hard of hearing, we're dealing with people who are deaf with no deaf skills. And that's very easily fixed. It's just a matter of maintaining a constant sound level in a room, for example, using public address systems that don't shriek. So by installing extra speakers in a public address system, for example, we can turn the whole system down so it doesn't yell at people. Or by installing, you know, something very simple business could do is to start installing induction loops, which is just a little device that triggers on hearing aids and helps people hear. So having an induction loop at a reception desk or in meeting rooms or public places, it not only does it encourage people who use hearing aids to actually use them, but it removes that communication barrier for people hard of hearing. So the built environment has to be upgraded to anticipate this giant wave, this silver tsunami of older adults and seniors that are coming onto the system.
So in your time with the foundation, has there been any success case that stands out for you?
Well, the Rick Hansen Foundation Accessibility Certification Program, one of the things that's really important is that we're not the code police. Our program isn't designed to come in and just find all the things that are wrong. Our program is also designed to find the things that are good and celebrate that. And, you know, that the Rick Hansen Accessibility Certified Gold Level, for example, celebrates that kind of access and that kind of planning by management. And the best example in British Columbia, at least, is Vancouver International Airport. They are just excel at creating meaningful access for people with disabilities.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for continued progress in these upgrades, what would you say?
I could send any message. I would say recognize who your client is. You know, if I'm speaking to the industry about the built environment, I would say recognize who your clients are. Recognize that people with disabilities aren't a small segment of the population. It's roughly 16%, 16 to 20% of the population. And we know that it's going to, over the next 20 years, it's going to balloon into 1 in 5 Canadians. I would say to recognize that it's not only the people with disabilities that are affected by the built environment. It's everybody who has a disability has at least one person in their life. Brother, sister, father, family, or even if it's a paid caregiver, there's at least one person in their life that's also affected by the built environment. So, you know, it's really not 20% of the population, it's really 40% of the population affected by the built environment. But the big thing that I would say to them is, I would say, get a hold of the Conference Board of Canada report that just recently came out, which is available on rickhansen.com, and take a look at what the Conference Board of Canada has to say about creating a more accessible environment and the process of that. If that was done in terms of creating a more accessible environment in the workplace, the Conference Board of Canada has put a number on that failed access. And the number is $17 billion to the Canadian economy is just laying there waiting for someone to pick it up. People with disabilities in our community are underemployed or unemployed to an extent of nearly 50% of the community. And that's just lost revenue. That's lost gross national product. That's just a missed opportunity. You know, if there was $17 billion worth of oil in the ground, would you leave it in the ground? Probably not. And the Conference Board of Canada report puts a number on that and says we're leaving $17 billion on the table by not having an accessible environment, by not creating meaningful access, therefore not creating meaningful opportunities for people with disabilities.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay in the room.
If I can help you in any way, just please let me know.
Well, this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Christy Mason, who will tell us a little bit about a project she's been working on.
This is Cam Wells here with
Christy Mason.
She's going to be telling me a little bit about her latest experiences in disability life.
Yeah, so I wanted to start making my own Facebook page and my own YouTube page because of a young girl who lives in Alabama. Her name is Cherise Hogan. And she told her life story about living with cerebral palsy. And I've been following her for a few years, and I like her videos. I watched a few of them last night, to be exact. And so I made a tribute video a long time ago on a different account for YouTube. And she saw it, and she commented, "Thank you so much, I'll subscribe to your YouTube channel." That made me realize maybe I should share my story with my disability, which is apraxia. So I started that like 3 weeks ago, and I've gotten a lot of likes, mostly family members, and I've got 5 subscribers so far on YouTube.
So can you tell me a little bit about apraxia for those who might not know?
Now, what apraxia is, it's due to an illness at birth. Like, say, I was born with a fever, so that could, what's that called? Diagnose people with apraxia. I was born with it at 18 months. That's when I was diagnosed.
So, what do you hope to accomplish by putting together this Facebook campaign?
I hope to spread awareness. So I want everyone to wear, I think it's like a purpley type color for May 14th, which is Apraxia Awareness Day. It says it on the page. I should probably say the page name, which is Christy Living with Apraxia. That's the Facebook, and it's also on YouTube, which is Christy Living with Apraxia.
So, have there been any challenges in getting the word out so far?
Yeah, usually I'm busy, and then sometimes I don't post. Like, I do a daily update. So I say what I did. This is at 9 o'clock. I post this video at 9 o'clock at night. Don't know why. So
you do it when you're free.
Yeah. I do it at 9 at night every day. So I say what I did, who I was with, and stuff like that. And then I tell them what I'm doing the next day, which is like tomorrow.
So do you believe there's going to be a positive response, breaking down some of the walls in terms of what apraxia is and what it really means?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of awareness now that I made this page.
So people can go on YouTube or on Facebook just to find out a little more.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have an introduction video of what the disability is and what my struggles were and what I accomplished with the disability. Like, I wrote my own book, like you have done in an interview with me on that book.
So, if you could send any one message to the community about the need for apraxia awareness and just greater understanding, what might you say?
I would say, look closely. Even though it's an invisible disability, sometimes it may show for the ones who are not diagnosed as early as I was, and I had a lot of speech therapy at the John McGivney Center, where they had this thing that looked like a duck. It was a headgear that looked like a duck, and one of the lines I had to say was, "Susie saw some scissors," and I'm able to speak, and it's very unnoticeable, except for in my work, in my schoolwork. I need extra time and all that.
I think we all have that that situation, but that's the thing. sometimes it's the disabilities you can't see that have the greatest impact, and people living with strength really can set an example for everyone else that it is manageable.
I was glad I was diagnosed at an early age, because it probably would have been noticeable if I was not going through therapy and all that for what I did.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And I'm going to be a college graduate soon in April. My last class is April 23rd. I hope that a lot of people with apraxia who have... I want to know how many people there are of us. That's also why I want to reach out to the other people that have apraxia. Because frankly, I'm the only one that I know. Except for my friend Natalia, who is noticeable. It's noticeable for her, the way she walks, the way she talks.
Well, thank you again.
You're welcome.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Brad McCannell from the Rick Hansen Foundation, and Christy Mason, a young woman aspiring to raise awareness about her disability through social media. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Riley Maxwell, will be telling us a little bit about an event she has on the horizon. So tell me a little bit about this event you have lined up.
So Ricky Pointer is a deaf YouTuber, and she does a lot of videos advocating for deaf awareness, accessibility, and other feminist topics. And I'm going to have her come in to speak to the University of Windsor about the importance of accessibility on campus and deaf awareness, to show that, yes, it is an invisible disability, but it is very, very much alive and on campus.
So what inspired you to want to take this step?
Well, as someone that is really, really close to the deaf community, I think it's very important that I see a lot of issues where things aren't captioned properly, or they have issues like communicating with professors or even food services people on campus. And I just want to have them have the great university experience that everyone deserves.
So, as you prepare for the event itself, have you been working closely with anyone here at the U to make it happen?
Well, I've been starting to get into contact with the UWSA to see if they can help us out, get the word out.
So, is this in any way similar to anything that you've helped out with before?
No, this is entirely new to me. Since joining the Delta Zeta sorority and seeing all the stuff that they do for Starkey Hearing Foundation, I thought, why not try something on campus? So I wanted to step into something new.
So how are you spreading the word about it?
I have a Facebook event up on the Ricky Pointer site, and also I'm doing a ton of social media blitzes, and I will be in the CAW Center throughout the end of March and the beginning of April, and also I'll be doing things over the summer to help get the word out to people.
Have there been any challenges so far in putting this together?
One of the challenges is definitely finding sponsorships for people, because it is a very pricey event, and also even getting the attention out there, because a lot of people don't think it's an important topic or don't even realize that it's a topic that exists in general. So the hardest thing is bringing the attention to people and to say that, hey, this is very important, this is very much real and alive.
So in your time putting this together and being a concerned advocate about disability issues, is there any success that stands out for you that the community has managed to achieve?
Well, I've also been getting a lot of attention from the deaf community and a lot of thanks for actually doing this. And through Ricky Pointer's fan base as well, I've gained a lot of attention and also a lot of help for the Delta Zeta sorority in helping this cause and also the Delta Zeta sorority's causes towards the Starkey Hearing Foundation.
So can you elaborate a little more on the connection between Delta Zeta and the Starkey Hearing Foundation?
Well, Delta Zeta, as almost all other Greek organizations, have a national philanthropy, and Delta Zeta supports speech and hearing, and the Starkey Hearing Foundation provides hearing aids to families of lower income who can't afford hearing aids and would like to have them.
So, if you could send any message to the community about the need for equal access and equal opportunity, not just among students, but in workplaces and just within the community, what would you say?
I would say to educate yourself and to not be afraid to ask questions and do some research, because the worst thing you can do is ignore it and not try and help. So find a local sign language class, or if you see somebody in a store that is deaf or hard of hearing and struggling, help them out. Try and learn a few signs in the meantime. And the most offensive thing you can do is to not do anything. Don't be scared. It's just, we are normal people, and we want to be accepted just like everyone else.
So, with this event on the horizon, do you think you'll get involved with similar projects?
I'm hoping to in the future. I want to create more advocacy and possibly a group on campus where we can learn sign language and learn about deaf culture together as a group.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. Invisible or not, any disability has to be taken into consideration. If there's one person out there who's denied equal access, that's one too many. And it's events such as this one that provide things in a comfortable, accessible atmosphere. Fact is, the public does have a long way to go in terms of education. However, if it's not geared to them in a way that they can actually relate to, it's probably going to just get lost in the mix. But the truth is, we as a people, we're hungry for change, for betterment. If you look at the progress the human race has made over time, just recognizing the equality of others. Now, I've had the privilege of doing a lot of interviews surrounding the topic of deafness, from the Chiltern Theater in China, which has a sign language performer right on stage, just as one of the characters, to Sean Forbes, who has a record deal with the same guy who launched Eminem. These people are never to be underestimated. And as we all know, disability is simply a part of this great puzzle we call life. And every family, regardless of recognition, regardless of how far back you go, has had someone with a disability who's impacted their life. Somebody who makes their family, their lineage, just that much more complete. The truth is, Delta Zeta, they've really reached beyond themselves in the sense of providing equal opportunity. They don't have to look beyond the campus community. They could say to themselves, it's not something that directly impacts me, so I'm not going to worry about it. But no, they've taken the heart to really bring it to the forefront, and doing so in a way people can understand, they can relate to. For if it was just here on campus, these people might experience equality there. But out in a workplace years later, if their rights are denied or misunderstood, they're not going to know how to deal with it unless they come in with a firm foundation that, yes, I am a capable person. When I mention that statement about employment, it's not something that's just theoretical. The first half of the show, Brad McCannell mentioned that there is a staggering cost when it comes to people with disabilities not being able to access employment services. Now, deafness being one of the more household names of disability, you would think we'd have made more progress. Fact is, we are getting better in things such as public transportation, having a printout of where these stops are going to be. But the truth is, it's still a ways to go. I mean, not all fire alarms are equipped with a flashing signal everyone's going to recognize, but it's about those little steps, I think. It's about finding the next innovation. A cure is always the desired goal, but it's not necessarily what's going to happen immediately. But if we inch our way there, we as a people can get better. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. The fact is, disability life is human life. It is about getting the word out, saying, I'm here. Maybe I have something that makes me unique, but I have a lot to share, a lot to contribute to this community. Starkey Hearing Foundation, in particular, targeting low-income families, that's really the way to do it. Because disability can be an expensive thing. We all know that. Let's not kid ourselves about it. But truth is, there have to be the right supports. Are we as a people so backward, we're going to say, I'll provide you with everything you need because you can pay for it. Oh, you may grow up to be a genius, but nah, you don't hear the same way, so nah, we're just not. What message does that send our community about equality? These children with disabilities, they're going to grow up to be leaders. And they're going to base their practices on the message we send today. That message can be many things. It can be, you're different, so nah, we'll find a reason to exclude you. Nah, you move a little differently, maybe we'll find a reason to exclude you. If you want to build the unscalable wall of the impossible standard, that's how you do it. But if you reach beyond yourself, as Delta Zeta is, you find ways of understanding these things better and better. A few years ago, I interviewed a water ski jump champion, completely blind. Most people would say, he can't do that. And that's a precept we all live by. Until somebody stands up and says, we can change it. We can do better. Why do we limit ourselves? Why don't we ask the question, what can this person do? What can they achieve? Why are we so quick to say things are impossible? Hundreds of years ago, a person with paralysis, it would be impossible for them to move around. Somebody then invented a somewhat cumbersome piece of furniture with wheels on it, which led to a better one, and a better one. Now we have ones that can drag race on beaches. And that's completely true. I've interviewed drivers of such. In fact, there are wheelchairs that can climb mountains. It's all about simply adapting your thinking. Thinking beyond. If you can do that, you're already ahead of the game. Yeah, we're in a society, we're the need-it-now generation. Our phone will think for us, but we need an answer good, fast, and cheap. You can't always have it that way. Time and effort, my friends. They're what disability life is all about. Next week's episode, we're going to hear from yoga instructor Nicole Daigneault, who takes a lot of time and effort in her modified yoga program. Little by little, her clients get better, they get more movement, more range, and they become stronger. Why? Because they're the need-it-now generation, yes, but they're also the willing-to-work generation, which is something we all need to bear in mind. Progress isn't always evident, but it exists. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.